The metal door was half hidden behind a laundry bin full of dirty hotel towels. I didn't see anything strange about it, but Rachel showed me where to look, and I recognized the faint blue symbol etched in the metal.
Welcome to Floor 600. This is a podcast where two friends, me, Quinn,
and me, Natalie,
read the Percy Jackson and Olympian series by Rick Riordan. We are now reading
The Battle of the Labyrinth, the fourth book Riordan in the like series. Rick Riordan.
In this episode, we read chapters 14 through 16 of The Battle of the Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. So, here we go.
Yeah. Anyway, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's a 2020 world. I don't know.
2020. It sure is. The holidays are over.
What a start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been an interesting few days.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. But you know, can only go up from here, am I right?
Hopefully we can go up. Let's find that ladder. Let's go up.
I was going to say this is the first episode we'll be releasing in the new year, but that's not true.
Nope, we released one on the first day of the new year, and we're talking about Christmas.
Yep. We're a little bit behind, but that's okay. Whatevs, man.
Too bad.
We're just allowing for all the time zones to catch up, that's all. Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be ahead of anybody.
This is the first episode we're recording in the new year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Welcome to this new 2020 world. I'm sad that they didn't get Barbara Walters to do like, this is 2020 and I'm Barbara Walters. When the ball drops, like, I'm Barbara Walters.
I'm just excited to like get into some semblance of routine again.
Yeah.
And not have, like, crazy life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we still have, like, Christmas decorations up, and, like,
boo.
We're definitely, like, everybody at work is still in the Christmas sort of, like, or not Christmas, but just, like, holiday break thing. So, we haven't gotten a lot of work done.
I haven't worked in, like, 5 days. Partly because I was sick, and partly because I wasn't needed, so it's the kind of jobber.
If you're not needed, yeah.
You're not there. Alright, but anyway, enough chit-chat. Let's
Chapter 14!
My brother duels me to the death. The what?
I don't know. I thought for some reason the chapter title started with the.
No, the chapter title is My Brother Duels Me to the Death.
All right, so what did you give it?
4 stars.
I give it 5 stars.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a bit high, but yeah.
Well.
Because, like, first thing is, well, other brothers that we know, Tyson, oh my god, Tyson is doing something bad.
Yeah, but you know it's not Tyson because it's not Tyson.
True. I don't know. It's just duel to the death, brothers. Oh, so much drama. So much drama in this, just the chapter title.
True. It is a good chapter title. So, in this chapter, we're finally back into, like, quest mode, and I'm so happy about it because these chapters are so much better than the chapters we read in the last episode, and yeah, I'm happy about this. So, Annabeth, Percy, and Rachel are in the basement of the Marriott Hotel, which is where we left them last time. And Rachel's showing them the old metal door, and she thinks it's rusted shut because she hasn't been able to open it. But Annabeth's like, nah, girl. It just takes a touch of a half-blood and, like, touches the delta on the door and it opens. But she probably is really pleased with herself for showing off. But
definitely. When is Annabeth not pleased with herself?
For approximately 3 pages when she was very concerned about the quest.
3 whole pages?
Yeah. So they step inside the labyrinth and switch on their flashlights and find a cyclops skeleton strung across a tunnel like a giant X. Mm-hmm. And Annabeth is like, it's so old, it can't be anybody we know. And Percy's like, oh, so it's not Tyson, she means. obviously, because it's, like, been there for a really long time.
But I love Rachel's reaction, like, you know, a Cyclops? Yeah. Like,
yeah, she's
and they're like, yeah, but, like, that's okay. They're down here somewhere. Like, our friend Grover and my brother Tyson are down here somewhere. Yeah. And she's like, well,
okay,
can we keep going?
Yeah, so they, like, continue down the tunnel, and they come to a crossroads. And Annabeth and Percy are deliberating, should they go left, should they go right, should they go straight, what's happening here? And Rachel's, like, says that they need to go straight, but of course, Annabeth disagrees with her because the architecture isn't old enough. And Rachel's like, look, the path is bright. Like, she can see, like, a brightness on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to follow the brightness. And also, there's a trap to the right that has holes for spikes. So, might not want to go that way.
I love how confident Annabeth is and how many times she's proven wrong in this chapter. It's just like Rachel just being like, you can go that way if you want.
If you
want
to get stabbed with a spike.
You're gonna die, but...
Right, and throughout this whole, like, section, we just see Annabeth question her again and again. It's like, dude, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Please calm down.
Yeah.
My mom saw your post on Instagram about pitting the girls against each other, and she's like, that's so true. It's so old-fashioned. She doesn't sound like that. I don't know why I did that voice for my mom. But she was like, she was in hearty agreement with us.
Yeah, about pitting the girls against each other. It's just a trope that has to happen in the, I don't know, in like a certain era of books, like up until a certain point, and it still happens today, but
yep.
I don't think to the same extent.
Yeah.
Because people have learned that girls tend to like each other more than they hate each other.
Yeah.
Though they hate each other in certain ways.
But, like, I don't think there's any... Okay, that's not true. There's two people I can say that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
And they only happen to be women.
Yeah.
It's not based on the fact that they're women. It's just based on their actions. So it's like...
No. Like, I don't know anybody that I hate just for existing.
Yeah.
You hate someone for their actions. And, yeah, the first person I think of who I hate is a woman, but that's just because she has done me wrong. Like,
yeah, you don't just wake up one day and you're like, I hate that person for being a woman.
Yeah. And, like, it's different when you hate someone and you've never met them.
Yeah.
Like,
Annabeth has reason in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
But not, like, real reason.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't know Rachel well enough.
I think
besides the fact that Rachel likes Percy and Percy might like Rachel.
Yeah, it's not a good enough reason. And, yeah, and she doesn't ask any questions to Rachel. So, like, she doesn't get to know Rachel at all until chapter 16?
She sarcastically asks her about where she's from.
Yeah.
As they're walking down this path just now.
But Rachel doesn't seem like, very open to it.
No, she doesn't. Annabeth tries to make quote-unquote small talk with Rachel, and she asks her where she's from, to which Rachel responds only, Brooklyn. And Annabeth asks Rachel if her parents will worry that she's gone, and Rachel says she could be gone for a week and nobody would notice. And that response makes Annabeth think, like, oh, she also knows something about having parental issues. Maybe she is a human being after all.
Yeah, it's like a moment where Annabeth is sort of just like, oh, we have something in common. Like, right. We both have issues with our families.
Exactly.
Maybe we can talk on this. And Rachel just shuts it down. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about Rachel's past or family or anything like
that. Rachel does not talk about her family at all,
mm-mm.
as we see throughout these few chapters here.
Yeah.
So that's like a moment where maybe if Annabeth had been a little bit more chill leading up to this moment, they maybe would have reached that point already. But anyway, the squad hears metal hinges, like a rusty old door, like, yeah, exactly, creaking open. And Annabeth is like, what is that? And Rachel's like, it sounded like a door. And Annabeth's like, no, duh. Thanks, Lieutenant. Captain, I mean. They're like, should we run? Yeah, let's run. So they just run back the way they came, and they run straight into two Jacani and Kelly. Freaking Kelly, man. Kelly's She's back. Everywhere.
Kelly, you can never get away from a Kelly. Kelly's come after you, man. Have you ever met a Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah? Has she always just shown up in random spots trying to kill you?
No.
No?
But before Percy can draw a sword, because he's just so surprised to see Kelly the Ampusa there.
I feel like we've never talked about it, but it's Kelly with an I. I don't like it when they just add extra I's to names, and you can always tell that, like, oh, it's Kelly with the I's coming. Well, you know? Or like,
well,
Sherry.
She's a cheerleader, though. He was trying to give them, like, cheerleadery names. Because doesn't the other girl, like, have a cheerleadery name,
too? Yeah, I think it's, like, Brandy or something like that.
It's not Brandy. It starts with an A, I think.
Ashley. Jamie.
Jamie doesn't start with an A.
No, but it has an I in it. It's all the way back at the very first, like,
it is.
Beginning
it was
of the book.
Such a long time ago.
Tammy.
Tammy, yeah.
With an I.
With an I, see? Kelly and Tammy.
Where's Ron Swanson when you need her? Need him.
Yeah, we need some Ron Swanson level Tammy avoidance here.
Use your Tammy avoidance skills to avoid Kelly.
Post Diane.
Yeah.
Level skills.
Watch Parks and Recreation if you did not understand that reference.
If you haven't already watched Parks and Recreation, I'm a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the world's greatest television shows ever created.
It is.
Yep. It's
quality TV.
Yeah.
Right there.
If you did get that reference, congratulations. Before Percy can draw his sword, Kelly leaps forward and takes Rachel prisoner. Those
like,
claws.
Yeah, she like takes her by the neck.
A Laestrygonian giant appears in the hallway and asks if he can eat them. We haven't seen one of those guys in a little while.
Yeah.
And Kelly says no. Surprise!
You're not allowed to eat these heroes.
Because the master will want them for entertainment and orders them to march or die. Fabulous. She always has such dramatic lines. It's great. So they are marched down this tunnel until they reach some big bronze doors that are emblazoned with a pair of crossed swords. And they can hear a crowd roaring behind these doors. So one of the Dracani asks, or says that they will be very popular with their hosts. So of course Percy asks who their host is, to which she responds, oh, you'll see. You'll get along famously. He's your brother, after all. So the giant picks up Annabeth by her shirt, which would just hurt so much.
Yeah, because it would just be like choking you on the front of your shirt.
Especially if it's one of those cheap cotton Camp Half-Blood shirts.
Yeah. It'll be like rough, too.
And then you know it's just, like, slowly stretching out while he's holding
yeah.
her by it.
So you know that, like, by the time we're done with this capture, I'm going to look terrible. This shirt
just,
is
like,
ruined.
Hopefully she got a clean one when she went to mourn Percy.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe
well, it's
a...
been a few weeks. Hopefully
yeah,
she changed
true.
Clothes.
True.
Maybe a shower.
Yeah. Kelly is still holding Rachel, so Percy is pushed forward alone onto the floor of a giant arena. Mm-hmm. And in this arena, a giant and a centaur are fighting in the middle, like, of the floor, while, like, the stands are full of monsters and demigods,
yeah.
too. And, like, giants and Dracani and anything horrible you could imagine, basically, is
all the terrible
there.
Things in the
yeah.
world.
Basically, Luke's whole army. Or should we say Kronos's?
Probably. Kronos Luke.
Yeah. So there are skulls all over the place, which is really weird and gross. Some of them are really old and some of them are fresher.
Ooh, nice. Some fresh skull.
Yeah, gross. But, like, most confused... Nervous laughter. Most confusing of all, there's a Poseidon banner hanging from, like, the wall of the arena.
Yeah.
It's, like, a green banner and has a trident on it. And Percy's like, wait, what? What is happening? And then, to make matters even worse, he sees Luke wearing, like, the same outfit he had worn in Percy's dream, which, you know, makes it real, I guess.
Yeah.
But he is still not wearing his sword, which Percy is still like, it's really odd. Why wouldn't he have a sword on him, you know? And then next to Luke, this whole situation just keeps getting worse.
It's terrible. It's a bad situation that they're in.
When I was writing the notes, I didn't realize, like, this is a really bad situation. Next to Luke is the giantest giant Percy has ever seen.
The giantest giant?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be the biggest giant?
Doesn't that mean basically the same thing?
I know, but it just sounds a little better than giantest giant.
But it's fun to say giantest. And he's wearing nothing but a loincloth, which is always fun, and has red skin covered in blue wave tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah. Covered in tattoos. Do you think they were he was born with tattoos, or was it
No, I think he probably tattooed himself because he's so hardcore.
But doesn't it say later that he also had tattoos, like, even, like, his eyes had blue waves in them? And...
No, but it does say that his teeth have been etched in a wave pattern, which, ow.
That would hurt so bad. Yeah. I always hate it when they, like, say, like, oh, yes, this person chiseled her teeth into points. Whatever. I think that's in Hunger Games. There was a person who does that.
Probably.
Because... Why not? You want to be able to never eat again?
Yeah. The centaur fighting the giant loses the battle to the giant. And the centaur's like, help me. And Percy can't help him because Kelly or whoever took Riptide from him. And it hasn't reappeared yet, which is inconvenient.
Yes.
So the giant, or the red giant up in the sands, gives a thumbs down vote for the centaur's death. So the giant stabs him and he disintegrates. Leaves nothing but a hoof as a trophy. Which is so sad.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the centaurs. I like them.
Well, my thing is, okay, so centaur, he disappears into ash, not dust. So does that...
Will he recreate himself?
Yeah. I don't know. Are centaurs like monsters where they reform?
Well, I don't think so.
Or are centaurs more like... Satyrs are, like, reborn as, like, plants when they die. Or maybe centaurs are just, they live, they die. You know?
Well, wasn't Chiron, like, granted immortality?
Yes, Chiron's, like, a different centaur. Like, Chiron, we can't really go off of. I don't think, looking at Chiron, we can go off of what happens with other centaurs.
Well... I was just saying, if he had to be granted immortality, it means at one point he was mortal.
Yeah. So, but, like, is there a centaur afterlife? Like, is there a place for them in the fields of Asphodel? Because then, later in these chapters, Nico says that, oh, I can't sense Grover because they don't have the same kind same mortal souls.
Do they all go to Tartarus because they're, like, not human?
I don't know. That's my thing. All right, quest query. Do centaurs and go to Tartarus? Also, like, with that, Tyson. When he dies, would he go to Tartarus?
He's technically a monster.
I know, he's technically a monster, but he lived his life as a good guy. So, like, even if you're born a Cyclops, I feel like if you go to Tartarus when you die, I feel like there's more of an incentive to be a monster than to be good, because no matter what, you're going to end up in the same spot.
I don't know.
Afterlife, like, with mythical creatures.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, do centaurs count as monsters? Or are they just, like, creatures?
Yeah. I think it depends on the myth, because in the myth, they kill a lot of people.
True.
But they also help a lot of people.
True.
It depends on the individual centaur.
Whereas satyrs, generally, like, I don't think I know a single story about a bad satyr.
Yeah. I don't know.
Me neither. Interesting.
It's weird. It's weird. Gotta wonder what happens to satyrs after they die.
Yep.
I don't know. Probably nothing, because they don't exist.
Aye. The giant marches out of the arena. He takes the hoof trophy. The red giant stands and declares the battle. Entertaining, but nothing he hasn't seen before. And asks Luke what else he has for entertainment purposes. And Luke tries to flatter him, the giant, whose name is Antaeus, as we find out, by telling him that they would be happy to entertain him for safe passage through his territory. And Antaeus is like, I haven't granted you safe passage yet.
And out comes a juggler! And they're gonna be entertaining Antaeus, right?
And another one of them has a lute.
It's just a lute and a juggler!
That's not true. I wish it was. In reality, Luke trades Percy's death for safe passage.
Yay! Oh!
Luke basically volunteers Percy to be a gladiator for the day.
Yay. Isn't that nice? Isn't that so nice of him?
He's the worst. Antaeus is just like, perhaps, if I am entertained enough.
Yes, this has to be a good show. Put on a show. Yeah. But there's a positive because Antaeus is automatically interested in Percy because Percy is a son of Poseidon. And Antaeus is also a son of Poseidon. So yeah. He's just like, you gotta die well. Only the sons of Poseidon die well. So this should be a good show.
Yeah. So Annabeth calls to Luke to stop this and, like, let them go. And seeing her just kind of stunts him for a moment. He's like, oh, you're here.
Yeah, Luke seemed to notice her for the first time. He looked stunned for a moment. Annabeth? And then, enough time for females.
Yeah. This now isn't the time for the female sports, Luke. But it's like, why is Luke so surprised to see her? Like, did he not know that she was with Percy? How could he not have known?
I wonder how much Kronos is in control of Luke.
So you think maybe, like, Kronos knows that Annabeth is his soft spot and is, like, blocking her from...
Yeah.
Blocking him from seeing Annabeth?
Yeah, and then when he does see her, it's sort of like a jolt, like,
oh, you're here.
What? How? Wait, what? Like, I think Annabeth is one of Luke's weaknesses, according to Kronos, so I think
like
Kronos
is... only weakness at this point?
Well, I think in chapter 16, Kronos says something like, oh, Percy, you were one of Luke's weaknesses, like, he feared you or stuff like that. True. So I wonder if... I don't know, I don't understand the whole Luke and Kronos thing, and we'll talk about it more when we get to chapter 16, yeah. But I don't understand it!
Well, I don't think anybody really does at this point, like, characters included, you know?
Yes,
there's just a lot of questions.
Well,
happening.
Obviously, Percy doesn't understand anything.
Except that Percy randomly has, like, a, oh yes, I know this mythology moment, and I'm like, what the heck, bro?
I don't know. I do not know.
Do you remember this random bit of information about Uranus and Gaia?
Yeah.
But you can't remember, you don't know, like, simple things about, like, Athena. Come on, man.
he has some blind spots in his knowledge. We have discussed this at length.
Antaeus asks Percy what weapons he will choose for his fight. And Percy's like, how can you possibly be a son of Poseidon? How can this... such a horrible place be a temple to Poseidon. Mm-hmm. And Antaeus is like, rah-ha-ha, Poseidon. So basically he doesn't really give him an answer. And Annabeth is just like, Percy, Antaeus's mother is Gaia, the earth goddess. And Percy's like, okay, cool.
Thanks,
file
yeah.
that away for later. So Percy, of course, chooses just to fight with Riptide. Which makes some of the monsters in the stands nervous when they see Riptide.
Yeah.
And he quickly, very quickly, dispatches a Dracana, much to Antaeus' displeasure, because it happened too fast.
Yeah, and he didn't give the permission to kill.
Like,
he did. Antaeus wasn't allowed to give the kill order.
Yeah.
I think that's his favorite part.
Yep. So... they have to do round two. And a young warrior walks into the arena like a demigod.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems a little bit older than Percy. He has black hair and has an eye patch under his helmet. And the warrior tells Percy that his name is Ethan Nakamura. And that he has to kill Percy because it's the only way to join up. And Percy pretty easily defeats Ethan because Ethan is wearing heavy armor meant mm-hmm. for defense, not offense.
Yeah. So he just tired him out.
Yeah, tired him out. Woo. And just kind of knocks him down and disarms him. And It's pretty, it's like almost sad how easily Percy knocks him down.
Well, it took a while. He was like
5 minutes.
Yeah, well, still five minutes of like just a steady like sword fight of true. Just Nakamura just going at it for 5 full minutes, and Percy just going like a casual block, 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 block,
dance out of the way, block, strike with sword. Ooh, you're disarmed. Boom, you're on the ground.
Yeah.
And Teyas wants Percy to kill Ethan, and Percy, of course, won't do it because he's a merciful young man, and he's not going to kill someone for no reason. And Percy helps Ethan up, but Teyas screams that they shall now. They shall both be tributes to Poseidon. And Percy's like, how could you possibly kill me, Poseidon's favorite son, and call it a tribute? Percy's like, oh, you have to prove that you have Poseidon's favor and come down here and fight me yourself. And Teyas is like, I've been fighting since the Pancration. I don't know any other way to say it. It's a really odd word. It's Greek, I'm assuming. But apparently it was a fight to the death that apparently used to be an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
Why?
Because. Why not?
Why?
Because. They took sporting serious back in the day.
That's such a toxic situation.
Toxic masculinity.
Rinse party once again. And Percy has learned his lesson about making promises here in the world of mythology. And makes Teyas swear on the River Styx that if he wins this fight, he and his friends will all go free. So Teyas is like, I swear. And he, like, jumps down, and with no weapon but his hands, and is like, I shall defeat you, tiny.
Because he doesn't need anything more than his hands. He's giant.
Yeah. Percy quickly gets a stab in on Teyas' leg, but he just bleeds sand. And it, like, mixes with the dirt on the floor of the arena and heals him, like, super fast.
It's sort of what I imagine would happen if Percy got cut in the ocean. Like, if he was having a fight in the ocean and someone cut him.
And it just, like,
it would just be like,
yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Percy stabs Teyas in the ribs, but it heals again. And Percy realizes that he can't kill Teyas while Teyas is touching the ground. Because his mother, Gaia, is protecting him. So he has to get Teyas off the ground. So he's like, how am I going to do that? And he looks up at the ceiling, and there are a bunch of chains hanging from the ceiling. So he, like, jumps off Teyas' head, grabs one of the chains, like, makes a hook with it, and, like, Teyas starts to climb the chains after him. And so he's, like, holding on to it. And then Percy, like, hooks his loincloth with another one. So he's, like, suspended. And then Percy makes all these hooks and loops and stuff around Teyas and keeps him, like, suspended off the ground. And then he jumps down. And Percy's, like, Luke is, like,
well,
free Teyas.
What I want to sort of just say, when Percy was tangling Teyas up. I like this part. It's, while Teyas cursed and flailed, I scrambled around the chain, swinging, cutting, like I was some kind of crane's monkey. I made loops with hooks and metal links. I don't know how I did it. My mom always said I had a gift for getting stuff tangled up. Plus, I was desperate to save my friends. Anyway, within a couple of minutes, the giant was suspended over the ground, hopelessly snared in chains and hooks. So, my idea is, so when they first start fighting, Percy's all like, prove that you're the favorite son of Poseidon. I feel like Poseidon did a sort of like a...
Helped Percy out.
Like, I think they talk a little bit about this. I don't know if this has already been talked about or if I'm remembering things that happen in the future. but like, Ares has like a blessing of Ares that if you get... whatever, if you're, like, sort of chosen, if you're highlighted by a god, you get sort of, like, their skills, so you're, like, really good at fighting. If you get a blessing by Ares, like, you can lead a battle very well, I guess. But I wonder if there's some kind of thing similar to Percy in this instant, where he's just like, all right, you're facing your brother, you're my favorite, here's your netting skills, here's some skills on how to Tangles and nuts. Like,
ships have so many ropes.
Mm-hmm.
He was like...
Yeah. And, like, we've seen that in, Sea of Monsters, when he gets on Blackbeard's ship. He's just like, I don't know how, but I know how to, how to work this ship, right, and all the rigging and all of that. So I wonder if it's sort of a weird Son of Poseidon thing that he is able to...
Could be.
Make good knots.
While clinging to chains suspended, like, 25 feet in the air.
Yes.
Luke orders Percy to free Antaeus because he is our host. I'm like, why would Percy care about that, Luke?
I don't
Percy
know.
Percy doesn't care.
But at this moment, Percy does, like, the ultimate badass move. Like, this is, like, action hero stuff. He's like, I uncap Riptide. I'll free him. And I stab the giant in the stomach. He bellowed and sand poured out, but he was too far up to touch the earth, and the dirt did not rise to help him. Antaeus just dissolved, pouring out bit by bit until there was nothing left but empty swinging chains, a really big loincloth on a hook, and a bunch of grinning skulls dancing above me like they finally had something to smile about.
I know, he's so
brutal. Oh my god! Like, that's just brutal. Like, and like, was Antaeus, like, conscious while his guts is just spilled out? Was he going, no, I'm melting, whatever, and like, oh my god. And Percy's just like, I'll free him.
Stab.
Boom!
Hey, like, Percy is hardening up.
He's hardcore. He's hardcore.
He is.
It's getting there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gonna be exciting!
It's gonna be what?
Exciting.
Oh. I thought you said it's gonna be sudden. I mean, we've kind of seen it coming. He's preparing for an eventual war. So. Yeah. But yeah. After Bruce.
But I think it's interesting that the way that the demigods see death. Because I think a mortal's death, so like if it's a demigod's death or a mortal's death, I think they really hit hard, it hits home for them a little bit more. But then if it's a monster or a satyr or a centaur, for that matter, I don't think it really hits them in the same way, because, first of all, there's no body.
Yeah. Well, and they don't care about monsters.
Yeah, and they don't care about them. But even, like, the centaur asked him for help. That was an obvious, like, this is a good creature that, whatever. Yeah. And
he couldn't do anything.
He couldn't do anything, so it's not like we...
Yeah.
But whatever. When he does die, when the centaur is killed, Percy's just like, whoop! Okay. Move on. Let's face this next foe.
Yeah. Like,
I don't think it hits them as hard.
Later, he feels bad about Mrs. O'Leary.
Yeah. But Mrs. O'Leary is fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It just seems weird.
It's different, definitely. Because, you know, they're not human.
Yeah.
So I think to a human, I mean, it would be the same, like, if a centaur sees a demigod die, it's not going to hit them as hard as a centaur's death.
True. I don't know. It's just strange to me. I just feel like death in these books is handled differently, because there's so much death, yeah, but it doesn't feel like it, because...
Yeah. Half of it's evil monsters, half, so...
more than half of it's evil monsters, and...
Yeah.
You never get a body. You never get that funeral. It's not like Antaeus has some... Well, he has a wailing mother, but, like, he doesn't have someone who loves him that will just, like, come out of the shadows of the arena going, no!
Yeah. But even when Annabeth was burning Percy's burial shroud, like, they didn't have a body then either.
That's true. But I feel like they took it a lot more seriously. There were tears. Yeah. Sure.
True. It is interesting. They just, like, spend so much time there, lives, like, running from death, trying not to die before they turn 16.
Yeah, and then people die around them, people and monsters die around them all the time, and they don't really deal with it. Because, like, even the mortals that die, it's like, oh, Bianca's dead, but we still have her in the books. She's a ghost, she's still present. Zoe, on the other hand, she's a constellation, we'll never see her again.
Unfortunately, probably. Yeah. I don't know. They, like, mourn. What are they going to do? Just, like, sit around, you know?
True.
They can't stop. Yeah. They have to keep going.
But there's never even, like, a moment after, like, in the, I don't know, maybe there will be. Maybe at the end of these books, we'll have, like, a moment of silence for all of the many people who have died.
I'll just have, like, a moment of silence after the dust settles and be like, oh. This was the most traumatic 5 years of my life.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm.
But so, after Antaeus is dead.
Dissolved.
Yeah, he's dissolved into the earth. Dust to dust.
Ashes to ashes.
No, centaurs turn into ashes.
Yeah, and a centaur died, so there you go. Hi.
But after that happens, Luke is all like, ugh. Kill them all! But save Anwith. I need to chit-chat with her.
Yeah. Luke is like, I should have killed you a long time ago, Percy Jackson. And Percy's like, oh, you already tried that. It didn't work. Yeah, so Luke is like, kill them, but spare the girl. The blonde one.
Yeah, not the redhead. We don't care.
Yeah. He says he wants to talk to her before their quote-unquote great triumph. There's a lot of things in quotation marks in this episode. Percy, seeing that they are hopelessly outnumbered, pulls the Stygian ice whistle out of his pocket, which you know that he's desperate because he swore he wasn't going to use it.
Yeah.
But he does.
What's strange is that the thing, like, the whistle gets, like, colder when he is just like, okay, it's time, I have to use it, and it like, knows that it needs to be used. And
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, so he pulls it out of his pocket, he uses it, it makes no audible sound, but it shatters. Like, immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke is just like, okay, what was the point of that? LOL. And, like, while Luke's busy laughing, the Laestrygonian giant is thrown across the arena, smashes into wall. It was hard to say. And then there's just a giant, like, a massive, oh, woof. So, Mrs. O'Leary appears out of nowhere, throws Kelly across the arena, starts snarling, wreaking havoc. Rachel points out the door across the arena that is the correct exit, and the three of them, and Ethan, and Mrs. O'Leary, sprint across the arena and piece the heck out of there.
Yes. Awesome!
Yes!
So, chapter 15, we steal some slightly used wings.
4 stars.
2.5.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know.
Wow.
But then also, if you think about it, like, all right, wings, what kind of wings? Chicken wings? That's gross. Like, ooh, we steal some slightly eaten chicken wings. That's nasty.
Yeah, but that's not what it says. It says we steal some slightly used wings.
All right, if you got ordered some slightly used wings, what would you expect to come?
But they're not ordering them, they're stealing them. I thought it sounded funny, and it throws back to Daedalus, and it's like, ooh, why are they stealing the wings? There's a level of mystery to it, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Alright. So I love Rachel in this chapter.
I know. She's just, I love Rachel, like, all the time.
I know.
So poop you who people who hate Rachel.
Yep.
I like Rachel.
Poop on
Although, in their defense, I didn't like Rachel the first time I read these books. Partly because I always had issues with introducing characters and, like, suddenly making them a big part of the story.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was reading these, like, Grimm Sisters books. I don't remember what they were called, but they were really cool. They were called the Sisters Grimm, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I remember those, but
I don't remember. They were, like, cloth-bound, and they were all, like, gold, and they were really cool. And I loved them for a while. And then I read, like, the first three books, and two major characters died, including the dog. And then the fourth, yeah, I know, right?
Why would you kill the dog?
I know. And then the fourth book, I had time to resolve myself to the fact that these characters were dead, and then they came back, They were just suddenly alive again in the fourth book, and I was like...
That's annoying.
This is bogus, and I threw it, and then I never finished reading it, because that's mad.
Yeah. Maybe you should revisit them. Yeah, see if, like,
there's no good explanation for it.
I don't know.
It's annoying. But anyway. Ugh.
Rachel.
I used to hate Rachel, now I like Rachel. Rachel, good old Rachel, leads them away from the arena, despite Annabeth's continued protests about how this isn't the right way. And in Annabeth's defense,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Rachel did just lead them into a giant trap.
Well, it wasn't a trap. It was the way they had to go through that place.
True. I mean, I guess they didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
There was no other route around this arena. So, yeah. Not Rachel's fault. And they are, like, narrowly dodging traps and axes swinging from the ceiling.
I love that.
Yeah. Rachel's just like, duck!
I love that she's just, like, not even pausing. Like, all right, we're running! And, like, it never a paused moment when they, like, take a turn. And then just, I just love the idea of, like, a row of, what, 15-year-olds running in the dark. And then just the girl in front yelling randomly, duck! Left. And then, like, duck! A huge axe comes over them. Or scooch! And then they would avoid spikes or whatever it was. It's just so
left,
cool.
Right, duck, jump. It's like the ultimate temple run.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just do this temple run until they reach a giant room the size of a gym with columns holding up the ceiling. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Nothing really spectacular about this room. So, once they stop to rest, Percy realizes that Mrs. O'Leary has disappeared and feels bad that he didn't keep an eye on her.
Yeah.
I'm like, literally,
she's a grown-up.
A 12-foot tall hellhound. She'll be fine.
Yeah, she's a grown dog.
Annabeth recognizes Ethan as an undetermined kid from the Hermes cabin, like, years ago, and Ethan is not happy about it. And he's like, yeah, endure, Annabeth. I remember.
Yeah.
Yikes, somebody has some baggage.
Yes, he does. A lot of baggage, and we don't know what any of it is!
Nope.
It's mystery baggage.
He's such an interesting person.
Stopped at the TSA. Your mystery
baggage. Your train will be stopped. Everybody will get off, and everything will be searched.
Mm-hmm. Percy, all because you and your mystery baggage.
Yep. I feel kind of bad because last episode I was like, it's obviously Nico. Oh my god. And it turns out it wasn't Nico who was cornered. It was Ethan.
Yep.
So, sorry, Uncle Rick. I was just angry because I didn't like those chapters. And Ethan is angry with the gods.
Yes, with life, with the world.
And with Percy for saving his life, and declares that there is no...
And obviously with Annabeth for
some reason. We don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he liked Annabeth.
Maybe it's because he liked Luke.
Jealous!
Yeah!
So many uncalled for ships in this book. I like it.
But like, we can back any of them.
Yep.
You can choose a ship. You could probably find some evidence for it. Like,
I love it. And Ethan declares that there's no right side in this war. It's like, the gods don't care about us. And Annabeth's like, oh, why would you join a side that pitted you in a fight to the death, you moron? And Ethan's like, what does it matter? Like, the gods don't care about us. Kronos doesn't care about us. At least under Kronos, we'll be free, essentially. And everybody's like, you're nuts.
Yeah. Because they're like, where do you see that you're going to be free with Kronos?
And Ethan's like, I'm leaving. Peace. And Percy's like, you can't head into the labyrinth alone. And Ethan's like, I can do whatever I want. Leave me alone. Bye. And runs off. Basically just yells at them and leaves.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. I'm not gonna fight you.
I don't know. Ethan, I have questions on. I just want to know. I want, like, a full background story.
I like Ethan. He's cool. He's so angry.
He's an intriguing character. You're just like, what? Why are you angry? Why are you hating everybody? Why do you choose Kronos? Because, like...
How is he finding his way through the labyrinth?
How is he finding... Maybe he's just wandering through.
He just happens to get found again. Twice.
Yeah. So many things.
The squad is too tired to keep going, so they just decide to camp for the night. And Annabeth says that there was something wrong with Luke, and Percy refuses to, like, even acknowledge this. given that Luke was trying to have them destroyed by giants. Mm-hmm. And Annabeth is like, no, there's something off about him. Couldn't you tell? And Percy's like, no, because I was, oh yeah, I don't know, fighting a giant.
Yeah. I think with Annabeth and her suspicions on just something being wrong with Luke and Luke needing a little more help than just
chopping his head off.
Yeah. I think she just needs to voice what she's thinking more so that other people can sort of.
Well, she's trying right now, and Percy's just like, yeah. No.
Percy won't. Yeah, Percy listen. Just shuts it down, true.
He's like, yeah, he was trying to kill us, and Annabeth's like, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
Except she says, you're impossible, and storms off.
Mm-hmm. Which also is not the way to deal with someone when they're not listening to you.
Open communication is a great way to solve problems.
And you know who would be a good listener? Rachel.
Yep.
She would be totally open for, oh, you have some theories about
this person.
She has no idea what's happening in this in this world right now.
She's like a sponge
at
this point.
Rachel would be the perfect person for Annabeth to bounce ideas off of.
Yep.
And she doesn't.
No, because she's too busy being angry Annabeth.
Yep.
Annabeth asks Rachel which way they have to go next, but like in a Starkey way. She calls her Sacagawea.
Yeah.
Sarcastically.
Mm-hmm.
Angry. But Rachel basically just ignores her, and she's like, we have to go that way. And Annabeth's like, how do you know? And Rachel's like, just drawing images of the monsters they saw in the arena on the floor with an ashy stick.
Yeah. She's having some issues. She's like having, like, also, Rachel and Annabeth should talk. So that Rachel could get stuff off of her chest. Yeah. She's going through some stuff. That's why she's not talking at all.
Yeah. As much as she talks, it's weird that she's not talking all of a sudden. So, I think it's safe to say she's developing some PTSD with this whole situation.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, kind of freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
When it's just, like,
visualizing things. Like, there's certain people that are good on mission or on quests. And I don't, like, Rachel's good on quest, on this quest. Like, she's, like, the perfect person fitted for navigating the labyrinth.
Yeah.
But she's, it doesn't seem like she's very good with dealing with the actual, you know, monster fighting stuff. Well, this is the
first time she's been, like.
Yeah, and she's had no.
And this is really intense. Like, this is the most intense thing that Annabeth and Percy have done in a long time.
Mm-hmm. And Rachel has had no forewarning, has not gotten any kind of, like. She knows that Percy and Annabeth are demigods, but I don't even think Percy ever really told her that he was the son of Poseidon. And that was, like, she's learning as she goes, not from Annabeth and Percy, but from the monsters.
Yeah.
She's learning what the story is.
She's just, like, watching.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just held captive by Kelly.
Yeah.
So.
That would be terrifying.
Rachel's having a rough day.
Yes.
Rachel says, she's just like, oh, well, follow the brightness on the floor. Annabeth makes some snarky remark. Again, Percy defends Rachel, and Annabeth storms off to find some more wood for the fire while you guys talk strategy.
And I love that Annabeth says that, because you know that she knows that Percy does not talk strategy. Annabeth is the strategy person.
She's just being sarcastic and kind of mean.
Yeah.
As usual. So, Percy tells Rachel that Annabeth isn't usually like this, but Rachel just shakes her head and says, boys, totally blind.
Yep.
True.
It's true.
They talk a little about their lives, and Rachel's like, you almost died. And Percy's like, I'm always almost dying. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Hey, I'm usually about to die. I promise. Don't feel bad.
And I don't think that makes Rachel feel any better.
No, she's like, so you do this every summer? Fight monsters? Save the world? Don't you ever get to do just, you know, normal stuff?
Percy basically is like, no.
No. I don't think he's ever really done normal stuff, because even before Lightning Thief,
Love a school bus.
Yeah, he went to like, how many schools before Yancey?
Like 12 or something.
Yeah, he went to a different school every year because monsters would find him.
Yeah.
But he didn't know they were monsters back then.
Right.
I don't know. But he's never had a normal life.
No, he thinks, like, he tries to think of when he ever did something normal, and he comes up with nothing.
Yeah, it's like, he's a, what? No. He went to a high, nope, he's only been to a dance once, and that also ended in a monster attack.
Yep. And he was on a quest at that dance.
Yeah, what other school just, okay, finals, I guess, yeah, he's taken those, but his math teacher was a monster.
Yeah.
Gym class had monsters in it.
Monsters everywhere. Percy asks Rachel about her family again. I don't remember. What does he say?
He says, happily. Oh, they're just, you know, family. You said they wouldn't notice you if you were gone. She set down her drawing sticks. What? Yeah. She set down her drawing stick. Wow, I'm really tired. I may sleep for a while. Okay. Oh. Yeah. Oh, sure. Okay.
Every time somebody brings up Rachel's family, she shuts it down.
Yeah.
So, Rachel goes to sleep, quote unquote. Annabeth comes back, and Percy's like, you don't have to act like that. And she's like what? And he's like, you know what? Never mind. And goes to sleep.
Yeah, because Annabeth knows exactly how she is acting.
And we get another dream sequence.
Dream sequence.
Fabulous. At least this time it's mixing it up a little bit. And it's Kronos talking to Percy.
What?
We haven't seen him in a while.
I know, we haven't.
Kronos tells Percy that he is so close to his own destruction, but still he cannot see it. Oh, that was the dryer. I was like, what the heck? And Kronos tells Percy that Percy has assured his rise somehow. Yeah. I don't know. And as payment for the favor, payment, quote unquote, he shows Percy a glimpse of Grover and Tyson. And Grover and Tyson are still in the labyrinth, and in this, like, glimpse Percy gets of them, they're fighting a giant snake that's, like, about to constrict Tyson to death.
Yeah.
And Grover starts playing a song on his reed pipes, and the whole room, like, starts to rumble.
And then,
and Annabeth wakes Percy up, and Percy's like, Tyson's in trouble! And Annabeth is like, first things first, there's an earthquake, gotta go.
Yeah.
So they all jump up, grab their stuff, and start just running down Rachel's path, and the whole room just, like, starts crumbling behind
them. Yeah, it's like the labyrinth is shifting, it's moving.
Yeah. Or they're trying to get them to move along. The labyrinth is like, all right, you've been here long enough. Shoo, shoo. But poor Annabeth didn't sleep at all.
What is it? I think in... What is it that has, like, a maze that resets itself every day? Or every once in a while? It just starts changing.
In The Maze Runner?
Maybe. I don't know.
Because doesn't the maze change on him?
Yeah, I think so. Or, doesn't that happen in the maze in the fourth Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah. It just, like, changes.
Yeah, it just randomly changes.
I feel
changes.
Like it's a common trope.
Yeah, I think so.
Not a trope, but, like, a common thing.
Yeah.
Right. They're,
when you're in a maze, that it'll change. It'll be
as soon as they think that they got it, something happens, and they're like, don't got it.
Don't got it.
Yeah.
But they still got it, because they got Rachel.
Yep.
So they're running along.
The path is bright. This
full
way.
Of terrors.
Yeah. And of course, Annabeth protests because she's like, the architecture isn't right. It's getting more modern instead of older. And she, this whole time, her theory was that the workshop would be in the oldest part of the labyrinth. Mm. And she is so wrong.
Yeah.
And it's, the labyrinth tunnel starts to look like a space station. It's got like fluorescent lights and the floor is a metal grate. And it just gets more and more modern. Until they run into a dead end, which is like two large metal doors inscribed with a large blue delta.
Oh no!
They have arrived at Daedalus' workshop.
At the center of the labyrinth.
Daedalus' workshop. Yep. So this is such a cool workshop, and I want one. But it's like a giant room. I imagine like the ceilings are just super high. There's like floor-to-ceiling windows, essentially.
Mm-hmm. All natural light.
Yeah, perfect for painting.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, could it have, like, a glass ceiling, too, so if stargazing was necessary for some scientific studying?
Yeah.
That would be good.
There's a spiral staircase, there's, like, workbenches, glass jars of Greek fire, easels with illustrations, laptops, a giant metal egg the size of a man, a grandfather clock made entirely of glass. Basically anything you can imagine Daedalus working on is in this room.
I feel like it's such an amazing mixture of modern and antique and ancient, and it's just gorgeous.
The image I have in my head of it is just like, dream.
I know, it's just like, this is the dream. Just building house, room, whatever. Yeah. Like,
and it's just huge, so there's so much room for your stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, and, like, the loft is upstairs. You take your spiral staircase to the loft, and that's where the bed is, because, as we know from the Athena cabin, sleeping is an afterthought, so yeah. You smush the bed to the corner. But with Daedalus, that's not a problem, because you get the loft, and that's where the bed is, and
yeah.
Where everything...
And a telescope. Like,
yes, and a telescope. He has a little skylight up there, so he can do stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like some, it's in my mind, it's just beautiful. And then out the window, you see the God of the Gods, Colorado Springs.
Yep.
So pretty. This is just,
it's such a nice change from the usually very dark and gloomy and equally vivid descriptions we get of other places. It's like, oh, there's sunlight. That's not underground or made of black marble. But you can tell... Oh, include there are also several sets of bronze and silver wings hanging on the walls, like the ones Daedalus and Icarus used, but more advanced.
Yeah.
Like they have self-adhesive strips instead of wax, since the feathers are more carefully woven together and stuff. But you can tell that somebody was just there because the laptops are on and there's a half-eaten blueberry muffin on a workbench.
How would you only eat half of a blueberry muffin? You'd carry that thing around if you didn't finish it.
You're eating it and you're like, oh man, somebody's coming. And then you go upstairs and then you grab your sword and then you just...
No, I would take the muffin with me, go upstairs, go upstairs, grab my sword, stuff the muffin in my face, eavesdrop a little bit while I chew.
I'm more concerned with the coffee, the undrunk?
Well, then you leave your coffee there, and then when you come in with your dramatic entrance, you still have a little bit of muffin in your hand, and then you can dramatically grab a coffee to wash it down.
Sword in one hand, coffee in the other.
And leftover, and still muffin bits in your mouth. Well, hello, everybody. Sorry, give me a second.
Yeah. Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And outside the giant windows, Percy can see the Rocky Mountains. So Percy's just like, where are we? And a disembodied voice answers, Colorado Springs.
I don't think it is disembodied. It has a body.
Well, it's disembodied at first. Because he doesn't see who it is.
It's just an like a voice from behind.
Whatever. And Percy turns and sees Quintus standing on the spiral staircase, sword in hand.
And I love Annabeth's reaction. Look, Mr. Traitor, she growled. I didn't fight a dragon woman and three-bodied man, a psychotic sphinx to see you. Now where is Daedalus?
Oh, God, I love her.
She has lost all chill, and
no,
it's great.
No, there's zero chill left.
She's just like, no!
I did not come this far. For you, traitorous scum.
Yeah.
And he's all like, oh, well, he's smart.
I love that she calls him Mr. Traitor, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Give him some respect. He's a mister.
Yeah. He tells her that he doesn't work for Luke or Kronos, but only for himself. And that she shouldn't want to meet Daedalus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, the workshop moves around every day. There's a different view. It's always somewhere high up, though. It just so happens that today we're in the Garden of the Gods.
Oh. But doesn't he say that the thing likes to return to the Garden of the Gods?
Yeah.
But, okay, so he also says, well, of the other places that the workshop has appeared, so a skyscraper overlooking Manhattan, a beautiful view of Lake Michigan. All right. Where? We know things about Lake Michigan. Where is there a high point on the coast of Lake Michigan?
Chicago. They must have been, it must have
but
been
But that's
Chicago.
Not a high point, because then he would have said, like, oh, we were on a skyscraper in Chicago. But then, like, would it be, like, a dune on the top of a dune? But that's not
that's
very
not
high. Yeah. Like, on the top of Mount Baldy?
That's what caused the sinkhole that swallowed that kid.
Yes! Oh my god, I like this! All right, I like this idea so, so much. Okay, so there is a dune, a part of the Indiana Dunes National Park called Mount Baldy. Look it up.
This happened a long time ago, so the statute of limitations for laughing at it is over.
This is a moving dune. It's basically super, it goes with the wind. It's very quickly eroding, and it literally moves. Like, it has swallowed cars, sidewalks, parking lot, road, and in this one
sounds like a mythological
thing. It does. But because it swallowed so many trees, all of the trees inside of it are decaying, and they cause, basically, it can cause sinkholes if there's people walking on it. So, many years ago, they banned people from walking on it. Except, people would still walk on it.
Yep.
Until a family was picnicking on there, and a little boy got swallowed. For 3 hours, he was swallowed underneath the dune. I think he was, like, 15 feet deep. They ended up, he was rescued.
Yeah, he was fine.
He was rescued, he was saved, he's perfectly healthy, it was...
Good old Indiana Park Rangers.
Yup, hurrah! But ever since, Mount Baldy has been closed to everybody.
Yeah, thanks for ruining it.
Thank you. I had so many Girl Scout trips there. Like, you just had to be smart. Like,
yeah.
Just kind of, like, follow the path.
But the thing is, like, that's not very high up.
Mm-mm. How tall is it? I think it's,
I don't know. I think it's less tall than it was.
Yeah, because it's eroding.
California, it's in Indiana, thank you. No. Oof. 126 feet.
Yeah,
no.
That's not that tall, but it's tall, but...
But it's not as low as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, high point.
This doesn't... It's not tall enough. But it is a fun theory.
Yeah, I can see there's definitely an entrance to the labyrinth on Mount Baldy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I looked up High Point overlooking Lake Michigan, and I get, so the Huron Mountains are located on the Upper Peninsula. So yeah, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan has a lot of more high points, I guess.
Darn it.
The state, in
I kind of forget that there's, like, 3 or 4 other states that also ring Lake Michigan, and Canada.
Okay, so mostly Marquette and Baraga counties are overlooking Lake Superior, their highest point. No, this is just looking at high points of Michigan. I don't care about Michigan. I want Michigan.
Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. I don't think it would be in Milwaukee. It was in Chicago. Unless it was somewhere in Canada. Maybe in one of these. Maybe on the Iron Mountain.
You know what? We could look at a topographical map.
True. There's a lot of forest in Canada.
If I can type, that would help. Yeah, it looks like Upper Peninsula has more high points around the lake.
Lake Superior.
It doesn't even matter. But it's just
fun because it's fun.
Yeah. And I like the idea of, what's it called? Mount Baldy being an entrance to the labyrinth because it swallows people.
Oh, this stuff isn't in Canada. Iron Mountain is in Wisconsin. I can't read maps, apparently. But anyway, yeah.
If you know the highest point overlooking Lake Michigan, contact us, and maybe we'll take a vacation.
Iron Mountain's not actually a mountain. I'm stupid. It's just a town. That's disappointing. Let's just pretend that didn't happen. It's also in Michigan, not Wisconsin.
Jesus, you're, like, failing.
Maybe you can just cut that whole part out. If you can't, just acknowledge the fact that I'm dumb. Apparently I can't read maps today.
There are, like, zero high points in the Midwest. So, it's, like, why?
Because it's so flat, man. Anyway, let's get back to the story.
Okay, so Daedalus is all like, whoa! Well, no, Quintus is... Sorry.
Yeah, so after Quintus Annabeth just, has her little outburst... Little, that sounded condescending. But Annabeth has her outburst. Luke is... Quintus is like, I don't work for those people. I work for myself. He explains that they're in the Garden of the Gods today. And Percy asks Quintus once again what he's done with Daedalus. And you know what, Quinn?
Yes.
You were right.
I know I was.
I don't say that very often.
You really don't.
I'm always right and you know everything. And Quintus says, my boy, you need lessons from your friend on seeing clearly I am Daedalus. What? Percy is naively like, wait, you can't be Daedalus. You're a swordsman. Haha, two things can't be true at the same time.
You can't do two things. You can't be good at two things.
I mean, it makes sense because when you know someone as one thing and then you see them, like, as another thing, it's like, wait, what? Like, your brain takes a second to adjust. But Quintus is indeed Daedalus.
Yes. Yes.
I may or may not have spelled
Daedalus
wrong.
You can tell by the us at the end.
I spelled Daedalus wrong for, like, the first half of these notes, and then I was like, man. And then I just lost it. Daedalus reveals the automaton body he has made for himself. The fifth one. Hence the name Quintus.
Yeah.
Yikes. He's found a way to transfer his animus, or his soul, his... unearthly being into these automatons. Although, Athena still brands him with the bird mark on his skin, no matter what body he's in, because of his nephew, Perdix, who he
murdered,
and who Athena turned into a partridge.
Yeah, so he didn't crush at the bottom of him.
Yeah, but man, this is intense.
Yeah.
And Quintus says that he started working at Camp Half-Blood as a way to determine the camp's worth and choose which side he was going to help. Thanks a lot for nothing, Quintus.
So, thank you.
/ Daedalus. And he just didn't want to take Luke's word for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Daedalus has been hiding in the labyrinth, making himself new bodies and hiding from death for over 2,000 years.
Jeez.
Why would you... Well, okay, never mind. We're about to find out why he wants to do that. Because the spirit of King Minos has been hunting him relentlessly for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And Minos became a judge of the dead.
Yeah.
So once Daedalus dies, he's going to suffer forever and all eternity.
Mm-hmm.
If Athena hasn't already assured that, Minos will.
Yeah.
So...
But Minos is obviously not... the judge right now because he's just haunting the labyrinth. So if he died now...
Would Minos be there?
Yeah, would Minos be there too?
He just instantly like be like, alright, bye. Gonna go back to my job.
Yeah, and like avoid... Yeah.
I don't know, but Daedalus is a robot, essentially. So everybody's just kind of shook. Daedalus obviously doesn't see them as a threat or anything, because he, like, sets his sword down, and he's just, like, having this chat with them.
Yeah.
And the squad is just like, what?
Yeah.
If it were a cartoon, there'd be, like, question marks over all their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. O'Leary just bounds into the workshop and, like, licks Percy and almost knocks Quintus over. Percy is like, oh, you let Mrs. O'Leary save us. And Daedalus is like, yes, probably because I felt guilty that your quest will be in vain. And Percy's like, why would our quest be in vain? And it is because Daedalus has already given Luke Ariadne's string. He already did it.
But it's not like they need it anymore.
No, because they have Rachel.
Yeah.
But maybe if Percy hadn't gotten stuck on Calypso's Island for 2 weeks and then took his sweet time going home, they would have already gotten to Daedalus.
Yeah. But what's sort of sad is Quintus is sort of just like, yeah, I gave it to him because I saw Camp Half-Blood. Yeah, you all are very nice. But you are no match for Cronus and his army and Luke and his army. And it's sort of just like a, I don't know, it's a punch in the gut. It's a gut punch because Quintus has no faith in the campers. He doesn't have
none.
Mm-mm. And he would rather, I'll side with Cronus because he promised me my freedom.
Yeah, he says that he was promised freedom by Cronus. And once Hades is overthrown, he can go in and reclaim Icarus and Perdix and, like, make amends with them and then send Minos into Tartarus. And it's, like, it's a good deal. I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
I think that Daedalus is a little bit naive about this situation actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
But
might be one of the greatest geniuses of ever. Of all time, but
I don't blame him for, like, accepting it, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably tired. He's tired of running. And it's been 2,000 years.
Hiding from death.
Yeah, Annabeth is, like, the second character to lose an idol in this book.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, gets really angry, knocks over one of Daedalus's easels, and is, like, yelling at him. She's like, I admired you, and now look at who you are, what you've done. And he just, like, hangs his head.
Because he knows. And it's sort of very, I don't know, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Because, honestly, I still like him.
Yeah.
I still like Quintus, or Daedalus, whatever. I still like that character. Yeah. And
it's like you can... I always liked Quintus as Quintus. Mm-hmm.
And I sort of like Daedalus as Daedalus.
Yeah.
Other than when he pushes his nephew out the window.
He didn't push him, he just let him fall.
Well, and he sort of unbalanced him and went, whew, and blew him out.
Yeah.
He
was trying to make amends, but in the wrong way.
Yeah.
But I think that book... this book just, like, plays with us a lot with our, like, loyalties. And it really emphasizes the whole do you really know what side is good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, Cronus is a bad guy.
But it's not obvious to some. Yeah. I think Uncle Rick does a good job at making it sort of, look, some people do believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been tricked into joining Cronus. They might have been told other things were going to happen and then he's trying to show us why someone would side with the bad guys and he does a good job because you can see why Quintus would join Cronus.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that it's a flawed it's like you're being tricked and it's obvious but
to him it's like a glimpse of hope.
Yeah, it's a hope.
You see that, like, Ethan is angry, and it's just, like, it's cool because I feel like in some, like, books, not even just, like, young adult books, but just books and stories in general, there's, like, it's so black and white, and it's, like, people are either good or they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes you get someone who's, like, I'm so sorry, they're fighting for the wrong side.
Yeah.
But you don't get, like, a real view of what people think they're gonna get, or, like, why they might, their motivations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Quintus has some, or Daedalus, whatever, he has good, complicated motivations.
Yeah.
So, write, what is it, like, I don't know.
Quintus is like, you should just go warn your camp. Tell them to start getting ready. But it's too late for that because somebody is already coming down the hall. Who could it be but Nico, chained up, followed by Kelly and two Laestrygonians and the ghost of Minos.
Uh-oh.
So it turns out, surprise, surprise, Luke had actually turned against Quintus a long time ago.
What?
And agreed to deliver Quintus to Minos, Daedalus to Minos, in return for Nico.
Ooh, that's not gonna go well.
No. Minos tricked Nico into going back into the labyrinth by telling him that Percy needed help, which was not untrue.
No, because Percy always needs help.
He was just fighting a massive giant, but he still tricked Nico.
Yes.
And led him straight into the arms of Kelly.
Kelly.
I don't like Kelly.
No. No one likes Kelly.
So Rachel is like, okay, I can't fight. What can I do? I can't escape. And she's like, guys, the wings. And they're like, yes. So Rachel immediately runs for the wings while Percy and Annabeth start fighting Kelly. Daedalus starts fighting the two giants and Nico starts fighting Minos. And Minos starts summoning spirits and Nico's like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, he dismisses these spirits. And Minos is like, ha, this is such a good part. I'm just gonna read it. Let me get to it. Hold on.
Is it the you don't control me, yeah, you fuel?
I am the son of Hades, Nico insisted. Be gone. Minos laughed. You have no power over me. I am the lord of spirits, the ghost king. No, Nico drew his sword. I am. He stabbed his black blade into the floor and it cleaved through the stone like butter. Never! Minos' form rippled. I will not! The ground rumbled, the windows cracked and shattered to pieces, letting in a blast of fresh air. A fissure opened in the stone floor of the workshop, and Minos and all his spirits were sucked into the void with a horrible wail. It's so intense, man.
It's so intense, and it's like one of the... It's like, what, the second time that we've seen Nico just go all out. Like,
I love Nico so much. He's my favorite. He's so awesome.
He is.
He's so powerful.
He is. He's so powerful, and we're only scratching the surface to his power, and it's, ah!
Yeah, it's like, damn, without an end.
Yeah. What is, do you remember the prophecy? I can't even find it.
Oh my gosh.
What is the thing that they say about the Ghost King?
Hold on, I'll pull up the Riordan wiki. Sit tight. We don't know the last two, right? Like, we haven't heard that part so far.
Yes. Oh, wait.
We don't know the last line. It's, you shall delve in the darkness of the endless maze. Check.
Check.
The dead, the traitor, and the lost one raise.
Okay, so the dead.
We got the dead. We got the traitor. You shall rise or fall by the Ghost King's hand.
All right.
Said it was Nico a while ago, didn't I?
Yeah, I think we were sort of, like, disagreeing. I don't remember who said who.
I said Nico. I think you said Minos.
Oh, okay.
And the child of Athena's final stand. But who's the child of Athena? Daedalus?
Or Annabeth?
Destroy with a hero's final breath. And that's, we don't know the last
one. Yeah, we don't know the rest of it right now.
So destroy with a hero's final breath. Somebody gun da. Who do?
Oh my god, so much. So much stuff is happening!
Oh, that's so good. Such a good chapter.
Okay.
So after Nico's, like, incredibleness, Kelly knocks Percy down because Percy was, like, staring at Nico, like, being boss.
Mm-hmm.
And Percy hits his head on a workshop and is, like, incapacitated for a moment, and Kelly is like about to rip his throat out, and Annabeth stabs her with her knife and she dissolves in the yellow smoke.
Yes.
Finally. Ugh, so,
killer.
Goodbye, Kelly.
And Pusa.
Rachel has already put on a pair of wings and she quickly helps Nico, Annabeth, and Percy put on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Because you always do your own first.
Yep.
And Percy is like, yells to Daedalus to come on. He's like, we can't just leave him. And Daedalus is like, go, I'm not leaving Mrs. O'Leary. Aww. Even though Mrs. O'Leary could probably just, like, bark and be somewhere else.
Yeah, I like that you said she can teleport. We don't even know she can teleport yet.
Well, she just, like, randomly shows up.
That's true.
Like, she must be able to transport herself through the labyrinth somehow.
Yeah.
So Percy's like, all right, we don't have time to deal with this. And they all have their wings on. Nico's like, we don't know how to fly. And Percy says, great, time to find out. And they all jump out the broken window together.
And chapter 16, I open a coffin.
5 stars.
4.5.
And a half.
Yeah, so this is a sort of, it's a shortish chapter, but it's a intense chapter because...
Yeah, a lot happens in this
lots
chapter.
Of stuff happen. So they jump out the window. And they're flying around, having
a very
fun.
Quick learning curve about how to fly. They all swoop down through the Garden of the Gods to the Visitor Center and find that the wings have already started falling apart. So Daedalus has worked all this time, he still hasn't perfected them.
Nope.
And so they're like, well, these are useless, so they just shove them in a trash can. And they're like, well, what do we do? And Percy uses, like, the telescope thing on the Visitor Center to, like, look up at where the workshop should be, but it's already gone that fast.
Yeah.
So it took Quintus and Mrs. O'Leary with it.
Yeah.
And Annabeth wonders aloud if Quintus has died, but since the labyrinth is tied to Daedalus' life force, the labyrinth would...
collapse.
Yeah. And cease to exist, hopefully with Luke inside it. And Nico's like, no, there's no way he could have died. I would have felt it. It's like a buzzing in his ears, I guess. Which, does that mean his ears are just buzzing constantly? Or is it only people
who's
in tune with?
No, yeah, I think that he can figure it out. Like, if he knows someone, if he has a connection with them, he can sense their soul.
Because can you imagine just, like, constantly your ears buzzing?
That'd be awful.
I'd be gloomy, too.
God.
And
nightmare.
Yeah, there's like a thing where that happens where your ears just ring constantly. I don't know what it's called.
I don't know. Every once in a while my ears just start to ring and I'm like,
Yeah. Like some people have like, it's like a condition where it never stops.
Oh, that'd be awful.
Yeah. And Percy asks Grover about, or Percy asks Nico about Grover and Tyson. And Nico says that he has a hard time telling with them because they don't have mortal souls. Meaning, do they go to the underworld?
Yeah. Or do they go to different places? I know
that... wander around the fields of Asphodel forever?
Yeah. I know that satyrs get reborn as, like, plants or whatever.
Right.
But Tyson is a big question mark for me, and I'm concerned.
Also, Percy would know if Grover had died because the empathy link is still
in place.
Yeah,
he would be, like, comatose.
So the squad decides that they need to take a car into the city to find a way back to the labyrinth since Percy can't fly, like, higher than what he just did.
Mm-hmm. I love that Rachel's just like, you just flew.
Just flew. And Percy's like, yeah, and I'm lucky I didn't die. And they just have to get to camp before Luke does, which means the labyrinth is the fastest way to get there.
Yeah.
Rachel just, like, looks down into the parking lot, grimaces, and is like, I'll handle it. I was like, okay. And Annabeth goes into the gift shop to buy a prism to send an iris message to Chiron.
That's, like, really smart. I feel like prism should just be a required object for all questers. Like, why do they not just, like, hand out prisms at the camp entrance?
Instead of them having to, like, hope to find, like, a car wash or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's weird that they don't have rainbow-making capabilities. Yeah.
Poor Nico's like, I'll go with you. I'm hungry.
Aww.
He's always hungry. Poor Nico.
Yeah, because he never eats.
Yeah. Poor
guy. He always gives his food to the dead.
Percy and Rachel head down to the parking lot, and Rachel approaches this, like, chauffeur driving a fancy black Lexus. Like, Percy always sees driving around New York City. And the driver's just like, who you? And Rachel just, like, talks to him. He makes, like, a quick phone call, and then immediately is like, okay, Miss Dare, whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Yeah. Which is just like, all right, who is Rachel?
Yeah.
Who is her family that she does not talk about?
Yeah.
So many questions!
And Percy's just like, what? is happening?
He's like, do you know that man? No, none at all. What? Oh, that was so strange.
And there's like a guy who actually rented the car and he's all mad. Yeah. So he's ready to get back in the car.
Yeah.
So yeah, they all pile into the car and they start driving. And after a while, Rachel makes the driver drop them at the Western Museum of Mining and Industry and makes a liar out of herself by referring to the chauffeur as Robert.
I thought she didn't know. No, I don't think that's a lie. He probably has a name tag on. He's a chauffeur. He has a name tag on.
I don't know. She uses it so casually, I feel like.
Yeah, if you deal with chauffeurs a lot, I feel like you would learn.
Mm.
Oh, they'll like you more. They'll give you more of a chance if you learn their names.
Yeah, but she's not concerned with that right now. I think she does know him.
I don't think she knows him.
Robert offers to call her blank blank. He's like, I can call your, and she's like, no, Robert, we're fine. And they quickly leave the car and head up to a chained-off mining shaft that has a little teeny-tiny blue Delta carved on the padlock. And Percy's like, how did Rachel see that from way up there on the road?
She says, like, it's obvious. It's right there. The entrance is there. It's, like, open. And they're like, that's just a mine shaft. Like,
yeah. So they, like, manage to get the door unlocked. You know, they unlock it. Are now back in the labyrinth, huzzah, making their way with Rachel's guidance to Manhattan. And for the first time, we see Annabeth and Rachel actually talking, like, having a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
They're just talking about architecture.
Yeah, good. They have things in common.
Yeah.
They also have Percy in common. They can talk about Percy.
And Rachel knows things about architecture because she studies art so much, and Annabeth's like, oh, cool. But this leaves Percy to, like, fall back and walk with Nico, and they just kind of walk in silence for a little bit, and it's real awkward. And then Percy thanks Nico for trying to help them, and Nico's like, I owed you for the ranch, Percy. Like, yeah. Don't think I did this for any other reason. That's not like I care about you.
Come on. Cares a little bit.
And he's like, it's not natural for Daedalus to have lived so long. And, like, coming from the son of Hades, that's probably, like, a really valid point.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nico says it's been hard having only the dead for company and knowing that he'll never be accepted by the living.
Which I... And then Percy agrees that, it probably would be hard for him to be accepted. But
why?
I don't understand why.
Because he's gloomy and
he's... Yeah.
And he's a spirit, so I guess it would freak people out.
I don't...
Percy's like, no, you could have friends at camp. And Nico's like...
If he just stayed at camp, he would have friends. If he, like, yeah. I don't know,
he's, was like, with... afraid of it.
Yeah, I feel like if Nico just gave the living a chance, he wouldn't be complaining about, all my friends are dead. Well, yeah, because you've never talked to a living person. Like...
Aw, poor Nico. He feels like... an outsider. He knows that he's different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he needs to give it a chance.
Yeah.
And Percy's like, you would have friends at camp? And Nico's like, are you sure? And Percy's just like, I hope so. Before they can make it any further, Rachel just, like, stops dead in her tracks. And she's staring down this path, and they're, like, at a crossroads, and this path smells like evil and death and eucalyptus trees.
And... what else do we know that smells like eucalyptus trees?
Mount Tamalpais.
Yeah!
Yay!
So, for some stupid reason, Percy's just like, yes, I need to go to this place. We need to find out what's in there. What are you doing? We need to go to Mount Orthus so we can just check out what's there. I don't understand. I do not agree with what he's doing here.
He's just,
at all.
Like, playing scout.
It's stupid.
Yeah, they...
So, Percy's all like, I'll go to Mount Tamalpais by myself. And Annabeth's all like, here, take my hat, you dumbass. Like,
because they're just... He just wants to, like, do a recon mission and then come right back. Is that how it turns out? No. Because Percy's plans never go to plan.
When does anything ever go to plan?
So Percy takes Annabeth's Yankees hat and thinks about the time she gave him a kiss for good luck, and now he just gets a hat.
She's being stupid.
Just like before.
Yeah.
So Percy heads out of the labyrinth invisible, and he hears the voices of two Telekines. And Ethan Nakamura talking about some weapon. And apparently this weapon can sever one's soul from their body with one touch.
Yeah, not even a cut. A touch.
Yeah. So, big yikes.
Yeah.
And up at the top of, like, Mount Tamalpais is the Titan's Palace. And it's all, like, fully formed and stuff. And Percy, like, looks down the mountain. He's like, how can they not see?
This was a weird part. Like, I don't understand why he was just like, yeah, I guess I don't really remember the bottom of the mountain. Like, the bottom of the mountain is fuzzy for me. I was like,
oh, because because there's such a thick layer of mist.
I understand that, but he's just like, well, yeah, I have even just a hard time thinking about the bottom of the mountain. It's like,
why does he say that? Everything below the summit seemed fuzzy to me, as if there were a thick veil between me and the lower half of the mountain. There was magic going on here. Really powerful mist. It doesn't say he can't remember it. It's fuzzy as in, like, he can't see it.
Still think it's stupid. So, Percy's, like, just, like, wandering around after he eavesdrops on the Telekines and Ethan Nakamura. So then he's just like, oh, I'll go see the coffin.
No, he's not wandering. Did you read this chapter?
Yes!
Now?
He's wandering around. He's just, like, spending time on the frickin' mountain. And he's just like, oh, I'll go see the giant mausoleum in Mount Orpheus.
He's eavesdropping on the Telekines, and one of them says, we must sanctify it in blood, then you, half-blood, shall help present it when the Lord awakes. And he's like, oh no, Kronos is about to wake up, I have to go stop him.
Which is dumb. Why would you think that you could?
Yes, it's not probably the best plan Percy's ever made. But he's not just wandering around.
It sort of seems like he's wandering around. He doesn't know where in Mount Orpheus this sarcophagus is. He's just like, oh, it's probably in that thing. I'll go over there. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, yeah, this is really scary. And then, so he finds the golden sarcophagus. Sarcophagi?
Why would it be plural?
I don't know.
It's a sarcophagus.
Go the golden sarcophagus of Kronos, and it's really freaky looking.
Yeah. He is, like, running through. He finds the sarcophagus at the end of, like, the hallway. It's on, like, a dais, and it's covered in images of carnage and battle, and the Titans basically succeeding in life. And it, like, gets colder and colder the closer Percy gets to the coffin. And he's, like, determined that he's gonna open this coffin and stab whatever's in there in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So he pushes the coffin open and sees Luke.
That's so weird. I do not understand the way that this works. But so Luke's body's in there wearing normal clothes, but and everything's there except there's a little piece missing around
where his heart would be. And Percy's just so shocked to see it that he just stands there. And he's just like,
he's unable to stab him because it's Luke. It's,
yeah, it's he's Luke. So surprised. So the Telkines, like, see that the coffin is open and, like, rush up to the dais. And they insist that Ethan renounce the gods and pledge himself to Kronos so that Kronos can rise.
And Ethan
does so. And immediately, a little blue wisp of light rises from the floor and makes its way to Luke's heart and awakens Kronos. So the body is obviously Luke's, except for the eyes, which are now golden instead of blue. And the soul is definitely not Luke's. And even his voice is, like, layered with this, like, scratchy, cold voice.
Yeah, it's like Luke's on first, but behind it you can hear something more.
Right. Kronos sees through Annabeth's invisibility hat and thanks Percy for keeping Luke scared and obedient. And Percy's like, whatever. And he, like, runs up to Kronos and stabs him. It does nothing whatsoever. And Kronos just flicks his hand and flings Percy against the pillar. And Percy's just, like, stunned.
Yeah.
Because Riptide has never been ineffective before. And Kronos reveals that Luke's sword, Backbiter, has been reforged into his scythe, which is what the Telekines had, meaning Kronos can use it on both mortals and humans.
That's not good.
And Percy asks Kronos what he has done to Luke, and Kronos is like, Luke serves me with his whole being, blah, blah, blah. Well, Luke feared you. I do not.
Okay, so is Kronos' body, was it, did it used to be Luke, or was it reformed in the shape of Luke? And if so, where is Luke's body now? No matter what, where is the old Luke? Because it sort of seems like at moments that the old Luke is still inside of this new body.
I think that Kronos' body was never actually being remade. It was always going to be using Luke as a vessel.
Okay.
So when they were rebuilding Kronos, it was really just like putting the pieces of his soul back together.
Putting the pieces of his soul back together and then inserting it into Luke's body.
Yeah.
But then how did he have a hole in his chest
if that was Luke? Last piece.
But that was Luke.
Luke was dead.
Has Luke been dead the entire time?
No, because he's only just now being inhabited by Kronos.
So Luke is dead now?
Maybe Luke came back to life.
Is this like Invasion of Body Snatchers? Like they grow a body separately and then once the body is complete, the original body dies?
I think Kronos was like in the golden sarcophagus. Like, okay. This is like his animus.
Okay.
Being reformed.
Okay, so what came out of the sarcophagus?
Luke was Luke this whole time, but he was giving power from himself to Kronos.
Yes.
In order for Kronos to rise again. So, when it came down to that last piece, all that they needed was that one more person, one more demigod, I'm assuming, to pledge allegiance.
Okay, so, but what came out of the... What happened to Luke, who was in the labyrinth still leading the army?
So Luke came to Mount Othrys.
To just lay in the sarcophagus for 10 minutes while...
up to being occupied by 99% of Kronos' body, which essentially... Or Kronos' animus...
I don't understand this. I don't know.
And then that last bit from Ethan Nakamura, stupid Ethan, was the last bit that Kronos needed to be fully able to.
But Luke has been leading the army this entire time.
Yeah.
So what? So, we only need one piece left. So he ran back to Mount Othrys just to lay and play dead in a sarcophagus while Ethan
Because he was probably like, look, Ethan, I have to do this thing. Stay here. Follow directions.
Ethan, I'm gonna go and play dead in this sarcophagus. You come up and say, I hate my parents, and I'll pop out a completely different person. Like, no!
I don't understand why you're having such a hard time with this.
Because there's two bodies.
No, there's not.
There is. There has to be.
No.
There was something in the sarcophagus, and yet at the same time, there was something outside of the sarcophagus that looked the same thing as the thing inside the sarcophagus.
No. This is Luke. There's only one Luke. Kronos is inhabiting
his body.
This is Kronos.
Yes. He is inhabiting his body, but he wasn't always.
No, because before, he didn't have a body. He was merely...
Yet he still looked like Luke. Like, he wasn't complete in the sarcophagus.
Right, like, he didn't have a body. Like, it was just his soul was in there.
He hasn't been complete this entire book. Yeah. And yet we have seen Luke everywhere else. And yet there has been a second Luke in the sarcophagus.
No!
Yes!
No, because the sarcophagus has never been opened. We don't know what was in the sarcophagus. It was Kronos,
but
we don't know what form he was in.
But when Percy opened up the sarcophagus, Luke was just magically inside of the sarcophagus
all
of a
sudden? Yes, because obviously they've been preparing for this moment.
But they haven't. They've been prepared for, we needed one piece left the entire book. So that would mean that Luke has been laying in that sarcophagus this entire time.
No.
Yes.
No, because they had to wait until the right moment to do the thing.
No, because they've only needed one lore piece for this entire book. He has had a hole in his heart this entire book. But we have seen Luke, a whole being without hole in his chest, everywhere.
So are you assuming that the Luke that's inhabited by Kronos right now and is fighting Percy is only a secondary Luke to the
No, Luke because the obviously this is Luke, but it's so confusing because it's stupid. It's stupid. There's two Lukes in this book.
The way I'm looking at it is it's like the angels in Supernatural.
Okay, I don't know.
Like, okay, my mom and John just watched an episode last night where Cass was being used by Lucifer as a vessel per Cass's choice. Cass was still in the body, but he was, as Dean puts it, letting Lucifer drive in the front seat.
Yeah, that's like possession, and, okay.
Yeah, so Lucifer, when we don't see him, is still somewhere. He still has his own being somewhere.
But Kronos doesn't have his own being.
But he, not a body, like a being, like a being. Oh, he's okay. Like a being. And he has a soul or whatever. Somewhere. We don't see it because he's off doing his thing. When he's in Cass, we see him as Cass. Kronos is merely possessing Luke's body. For whatever reason, we don't know why it took this long and they needed Ethan. Whatever. Moving on. Kronos,
but it's not a possession because he has a body.
We don't have time for this. I have to go to Kronos. No, you're not. Yeah. Kronos slows down time, making it nearly impossible for Percy to run. The rest of the squad couldn't leave Percy alone because they knew he would do something wrong. Kronos is like 10 feet away from Percy when Rachel yells, "Percy!" flings her blue plastic hairbrush at him, hitting Kronos in the eye, distracting him long enough for Percy to get away and for them to see that, indeed, Luke is still in Kronos' new lovely body. Annabeth is distracted by the fact that Kronos is obviously in Luke's body. Percy grabs her, they run toward the Lambreth. Kronos orders his minions to run after the squad. Neagle collapses his hands, and a wall of black stone the size of a semi-truck erupts between them and the palace, causing a tremor so powerful the front part of the palace collapses. A squad runs into the Labyrinth, and they're hopefully safe. End of chapter 16. Moving on.
And bring on the monsters! We're going fast because things have to be done today. Okay, so we only have one monster today. It's because Antaeus. Because everybody else we've already been introduced to so far. Because we're getting to the end of the book. It's exciting. But, okay, so bring on the monsters. So, enter Antaeus, the Libyan giant. As we learn in these chapters when we meet him, Antaeus is the son of Poseidon and Gaia. It's interesting just because he is the second son of Poseidon that we have meet and defeated. Because the first one was, what's his name? Procrustes, the stretcher. He was in the Lightning Thief. Also, a villain. Poseidon has a lot of bad boy sons. So, Antaeus is the son of Poseidon and Gaia. And as we've talked about this before, Gaia is also the mother of Poseidon. So, incest for the wincest. Incest. Hurrah. Yes. Natalie hates that I wrote that twice. And she keeps deleting it and crossing it out.
Because I don't think it's appropriate.
I don't... All right, sorry. If our listeners are, like, really into incest... Really? What is wrong with you? Sorry. Gross. You can say incest for the wincest jokingly, but don't take it seriously. We are not advocating incest on this podcast.
Thanks for the clarification.
Please don't think we needed that clarification, but Natalie seems to think we needed it.
All right, hurry up!
So, Antaeus lived in a remote part of Libya where he could challenge all who would dare, like, pass his house to a wrestling match, and, of course, to the death. And this was a bit of a cheat because, as we know from these chapters, he was invincible as long as he stayed in contact with his mother, Gaia, also known as the Earth. So as long as he's touching the ground, he's invincible. So Antaeus defeated all of the poor souls who he wrestled against. He was a big wrestler. And eventually he killed enough people to build an entire temple slash wrestling arena made out of the skulls of his victims.
Oh. So
Antaeus preferred his preferred fighting method was wrestling because he was just huge. He could take anybody, didn't matter the weapon, because also he's invincible and he's huge, he's invincible. There's no hope for anybody. And like he's big I put in my notes, he was like Fezzik or Andre the Giant, so big he didn't even have to exercise. And he could take ten men. And then I have like the quote from Princess Bride where Nigo is all like, "Where is this Count Rugen now? So I may kill him. He's in the castle with the prince, but the castle gate is guarded by 30 men. How many do you think you could handle? I do not think more than 10. Oh, I love Fezzik.
Good old Fezzik.
Princess Bride. If you don't understand it, read it.
Yeah.
Or watch it.
At least watch
it. Watch it. Watch it and then read it. And then be like, But honestly, I love the book. People hate the book. Okay, so wrestling. Do we know any other wrestling-crazed Greeks? Why, yes, we do. Wrestling was the most popular sport in ancient Greece. Everybody wrestled. So, yes, we know many, many wrestlers. But to be more specific, do we know any heroic Greek wrestlers? There we have yes again. And this is when Hercules enters this story. Always him. So, Herc was he was on his way to get to the golden apples of the Hesperides, you know, Atlas, and he was walking past Libya, and he had to go, in turn, past Antaeus, and his messed up temple/wrestling arena. And Antaeus challenged Hercules to a wrestling match, refusing to let him pass unless they wrestled. They want to wrestle. So Hercules, unwilling to go around and unable to turn down a fight, entered the arena ready to wrestle a giant. So according to some sources, Athena may have given some inspiration to Hercules before the fight, recommending him to lift more. And I'm sure at the moment Hercules was a bit hurt, like, I thought I was already the strongest man in the world and you want me to lift? You want me to go work out more? Yeah, that was a little hurtful inspiration done by Athena.
Do you even lift, bro?
I don't know, Herc. But after he saw and slash felt that every time he got any sort of advantage to and like would pin Antaeus down to the ground, because that's the whole idea of wrestling, pin your opponent down till they either tap out or you kill them. I guess in this situation. Yeah. Every time that would happen, Antaeus would just get stronger, because the more contact with the earth, the stronger he is. So, eventually, he was like, oh, wait, I need to lift more. And so, he lifted the giant off the ground, off of his mother, weakening Antaeus. And in this weakened state, Hercules was able to crush Antaeus to death.
Wow.
I know, right? And as such, Antaeus was defeated and Hercules could go on his way and hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. But what's interesting is the Greek word antios, which lies behind the name Antaeus, it means set against or hostile. So like antagonize comes from the same root as.
So we know he's a jerk right from the beginning.
Yeah, we know it from the name. And then, oh my gods. We don't really have any.
No gods were introduced.
Mm-mm. We could talk about the Garden of the Gods, but I don't know. It's a very pretty place. Look it up. Colorado Springs. Pretty, pretty, pretty.
Pretty, pretty, pretty.
So, quest queries.
Was the thumbs down thing real in gladiator fights? I don't know.
I looked this up, and the answer is, sort of. it was recommended against because basically gladiators were slaves, so they cost a lot of money to first buy, then train, then keep alive. So if someone did kill a gladiator, they were more likely to get fined because you just killed someone else's property.
Nice.
Yeah, slavery.
Great to look at humans as property.
Yep.
Not.
So, how far would it be for Rachel to get from her home in Brooklyn to the school in Manhattan?
At least half an hour.
All right.
I looked it up.
Cool.
Depending on where in Manhattan the school is and where in Brooklyn she lives.
Yeah. And she probably has a chauffeur, so maybe even less. Yeah. Probably more.
We already talked about that one. So.
So, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at floor_600. You can also follow us on Tumblr at floor600podcast. Also, join our Patreon at patreon.com/floor600 to help us improve this podcast. And if you do that, you get some perks.
Whew. And, as always, rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you for listening to this rather hurried at the end episode of Floor 600.
Yeah, and if you have any questions, you can email us at floor600podcast@gmail.com.
Floor600.podcast@gmail.com.
What did I say?
Floor 600 podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget the dot.
The dot's important. Well, yeah. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.